Welcome, everyone. It's November 4th, and this is the, I guess we could say, late fall Nutrition Counseling Roundtable call, and I'm Molly Kellogg. These calls are very informal. This is not, there's no content that I'm presenting, per se, here, and therefore I won't be providing CEUs for dietitians or anyone else. This is a place where you can chime in on how you're using the counseling tips you get from me, perhaps any observations about what happens when you start using your motivational interviewing skills. It's great when people can share the fun stuff that happens. This is also an opportunity to share any resources about nutrition counseling or training opportunities. You can also ask for input. Colleagues. Hello. Has a lot of background noise. I'm hoping they'll mute their phone pretty soon. If you have a lot of background noise, be sure to mute your phone. If you need to use the system to do it, that would be 4-star, and that would mute you. And as you chime in, it's great if you'd say your name and maybe geographically where you are, and if it's a appropriate or maybe useful, what type of population that you work with. Okay, I am hearing noise from a couple of people, and I may mute them in a moment if I keep hearing that noise. So, who wants to chime in first and say that they're here and perhaps share something fun or exciting or bring up a concern?
Evangeline Samples.
Hello.
From West Virginia.
West Virginia. Welcome. Is there something you'd like to share?
I taught a college class this past summer in nutrition to RN students, nursing students.
Did you include motivational interviewing skills? Who else would like to join in? And
this is Mary Myers from Freehold, New Jersey. I have been at your conferences before and always enjoyed it, and I felt I just need a little Molly pickup today. So I'm on the call.
Okay. Mary, I'll put you on the spot a bit. Is there anything you've been discovering recently with your clients or any positive experiences that happened in the counseling process that you would want to share with us?
Well, I've had an interesting turn. I've been in private practice for many years, and I live not so far from a Hasidic population and have only occasionally gotten somebody from there to come and visit me. But recently I've just had three people coming because the one was so successful, and it was challenging with all of their traditions and holidays, but it's worked out well, and it was a very interesting not dealing with that population of finding my way through it again. But So it was an interesting, and I was pleased with the outcome, and I used all of my motivational tools that you've taught us through the years. So thank you.
Well, and it sounds like you probably had an interesting time getting on the client's page, getting to understand a bit more of the ins and outs of that lifestyle and the food rules and things like that.
Yes. It's been a very interesting learning experience. So,
yeah. And, of course, motivational interviewing is – the skills can be very useful in terms of evoking from the person what you need to know about their lives and what you may be assuming if you don't evoke it from them.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Well, sounds very interesting. So – anyone else want to chime in with either something fun and exciting that's happening, or a resource to share, or a concern or question?
Hi, Molly. This is Joanne in Kansas City. Thanks for all your helpful insights. I put them to use, and I'm hoping that you and maybe some of the other people give me some ideas on how to quantify success when I report my numbers back to my supervisor. He likes to see hard data, and I'm wondering how other people might be doing this.
Yeah. Joanne, you actually sent me an email a few days ago, and I kept this question in case you didn't make it on the call. And that is an interesting concern, and I do not profess to have any expertise beyond anyone else on this call about that. And I'd be glad to open up the a bit for anybody who has ideas about how to I'm sorry, I'm going to mute a few people that, Haley, I see you're on the call. I've muted you. There seems to be background noise.
I'm going to mute my line, too, and listen in. Thank you.
Okay. the issue of how do we quantify whether, indeed, our clients are making changes, because that's what matters, right, whether they're making changes and the outcomes that we help for. Who has ways that they, you know there's noise in your background, unless you're about to chime in, do mute your phone. Who has any ideas?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Molly, can you hear me? This
yes.
is Claire.
Yes. Uh-huh. Hi, Claire.
Hello. Can we get a little more clarification on what she is trying to quantify? Is it results or is it amount of people and services she is offering?
Well, I know in her email already she said the only thing she's able to sort of say is how many people she saw, you know, and that's fairly easy to quantify, I guess. I think it depends, of course, on the particular employer or supervisor and what it is they care about.
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering as well. Is it somebody with a clinical background or somebody with more of a financial management background that's looking for
just
productivity
clarify.
Dollars versus?
Sure. Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Joanne.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's any monetary amount I can ever add up. I am thinking more along the lines of, you know, maybe medication compliance, or I'm not into weight management, so there wouldn't be any weight loss component. Other clinical indicators, and I'm just wondering what other people are trying to track. I work with chronic kidney disease patients, and about half of them are diabetic. The other half have high blood pressure.
Well, if we look at it as clinical indicators, yeah. Does anybody have ways that they are documenting that information? And
I have some ideas.
Okay.
So first I would start by quantifying the number of people that I saw every week or every month. I might break that down into initial visits or follow-ups. And I would do a year-to-date. With chronic kidney disease, you want to keep their albumin.
Are you still there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, okay.
With chronic kidney disease, you would want to keep their albumin above a certain level, so you might want to chart the numbers of patients who had an acceptable level of albumin, an acceptable blood urea nitrogen, an acceptable phosphorus level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm wondering how Joanne would be able to somehow tie that to what she did. anybody is, I'm presuming, Joanne, that's your concern. You want to essentially prove that what you do makes a difference.
Right. That's exactly right.
Let me just throw out an idea, and this is literally brainstorming. Joanne, if you're in a kidney dialysis center, of course, you see people ongoing, and they're in there all the time. I'm just getting a lot of interference from someone's phone, if I may. Someone who ends with 207, right, including that one. Nope, it's not that one. Let me try this one. It's not that one either.
But back to your question, Molly.
Go ahead.
I do work with dialysis patients, but this group of patients I'm talking about are chronic kidney disease patients that haven't progressed to dialysis yet. They're stage 3 or 4.
Yeah.
I see them infrequently.
That even makes it harder, doesn't it? I was assuming you were in a dialysis clinic. Yeah. Is what your boss wanting is sort of you to justify your existence, or I feel like that.
It kind of feels that way sometimes. But yeah, just to show some kind of impact, some kind of positive impact, which is hard to do short of pulling out a note on a patient, you know.
Yeah. Well,
I'm not numerically ranking my outcomes or giving them a grade or anything like that.
Right. Of course, there's always customer satisfaction surveys if you could get permission to do some of those, getting patients to fill out some sort of, you know, patient satisfaction, that might help at least present that.
Mm-hmm.
Because hopefully they'd be happy with you.
Well, yeah. Molly, yeah. This is Claire again. I had a thought sort of on your lines. Could you even start with having people sort of rate their own level of education or awareness, and then maybe have them re-self-assess themselves when they do come back to sort of say, yes, I have been able to implement these changes, yes, I have felt better, or yes, I have a better understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of use that as a measure, maybe create a scorecard out of that. Sort of like
survey.
It would be subjective, of course.
Of course.
That does sound like a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And then that also could allow you to tailor maybe what education and services you offer based on if you see any trends with this population and areas they may need more assistance with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that. I think that's a great idea.
Great.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, play around with it, and maybe in the next call you can share your ideas with us.
Okay.
Now there's something else I'm going to try to do. Didn't do it. I'm trying to get where all this noise is coming from. The background noise. So, does anybody else have any things they want to bring up or share?
Hi, this is Danica from Texas.
Hi.
Hi. I'm just going to introduce myself. I'm a brand new RD, and
congratulations.
Thank you. I'm excited. But I'm working at a health center a gym in Austin with kind of a wealthy clientele. And so I'm really trying to bring in a lot of this motivational interviewing and kind of health coaching techniques into this practice over here. And I'm just trying to learn as much as possible. So I'm just sitting in and seeing what I can glean from all you guys.
Great. So you're right out of school. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, and have you also done, you had some motivational interviewing in your training, did you?
Yeah, so we had, so I went to UT in Austin, and we had a whole course on nutrition education, and there was, we probably spent at least a solid month on motivational interviewing, but I've since read a book, and I forget who wrote it, but it was written by, I think, two RDs just on motivational interviewing.
Mm-hmm. That may have been Dawn Clifford's book.
That, I think so. I think it was called...
Motivational Interviewing in Nutrition and Fitness.
Correct. Yeah, that's it.
Yes, right. Yeah, and particularly if you're working in a fitness center, that would fit very well. By the way,
right.
For anyone else on the call, it's a great book.
I learned a lot from it.
It's only been out for about a year. The publisher is Clifford. Guilford. The first author is Clifford, Dawn Clifford. Motivational Interviewing in Nutrition and Fitness. It is well worth it. Has a lot of sort of sample dialogues in it and things like that. Dawn is a colleague of mine, and I was honored to be asked to review the book. And I went through it with a fine-tooth comb. Book. And Dana, I might as well ask you, since you've chimed in and you're here, is there anything you would want to know at this point, at this beginning point in your career? Is there something that you would want to know from experienced dietitians about the counseling process and how to get people to change?
Yeah, I'm still trying to pinpoint exactly what this particular population's needs are, because it is way different than anything we dealt with in school. So I guess I'm just trying to right now work with a wide range of different needs.
That sounds like what you are going to run into. And
you're
finding out from them what their needs are.
Right, yeah,
you
absolutely.
You don't have to figure them out. You ask.
No, and that's one thing that's actually been challenging so far is that people I've seen come in with a specific idea of what a dietitian is and what I'm going to do in that, like I'm going to give them a meal plan or something like that, and that's not what I'm doing. And so I've kind of struggled with the people who kind of want me to tell them what to do and still using this motivational interviewing technique to let them tell themselves what they want to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And Dana, I'm giggling a little bit here because you may realize you are not alone. I suspect there's a lot of people on this call who are smiling as well, and this sounds really familiar. I have some thoughts about it, but I'd love to hear if anybody else wants to chime in about how do they handle that when somebody has a misconception about what a dietitian can do for them.
Molly, this is Mary.
Hi, Mary.
I like to tell people that, you know, I don't hand out a piece of paper. You're not a cookie cutter. You know, I don't want to hand you something that says, eat tuna fish on Tuesday. So, you know, let's sit down and work out a program that is going to fit in your lifestyle and help you achieve your goals. And, you know, so you're making something personal. I get people all the time who say, don't you just have a piece of paper for me? You know, it's not the answer. So, but using, you know, questions to probe what they are interested in doing and then helping to find a plan that would come up to work into their individual lifestyle and help them reach their goals.
Yeah. So, Dana, did you hear all that wording? Things like cookie cutter and what they are already doing, or, you know, there's a lot. Does anybody else have language that they use, maybe even neat little metaphors like the cookie cutter one?
One thing that I have used with my patients is I talk to them about getting a meal plan that is suited to them. It would be the same as if you would go to a tailor and have a dress or a suit made.
That's a nice metaphor, too. I'm also thinking of that part of motivational interviewing where before giving advice or information, we ask a client what they already know or what they are already doing, Dana. And that's one of the things I suspect most of our clientele are pretty well educated and have a lot of thoughts already. And so doing a bunch of saying, you know, sure, I have a lot of help and information for you. I first want to find out where you are right now. What kinds of things do you do to stay healthy, or what kind of things do you do to eat well now, so that you're finding out ahead of time does that make any sense, Dana?
Yes, it absolutely does, and I feel like I'm doing some of that. I know part of it on my end is just practice.
Yeah, absolutely. Anybody else have any ideas for Dana?
Hey, hi, Dana. I'm Denise. I work in weight management in Scottsdale, Arizona. And the one thing that I always like to do when patients come in is when they say something like that, I'll always say, well, I'd want to collaborate with you. I want to find out what you're trying to accomplish right now. And so I just have 4 or 5 questions that will typically spill right off the top of my tongue to get them to talk about what their likes are, what they've tried to do in the past, and what works well for them. And especially if you're starting off on a really positive note, they usually have something that they've done or that they're doing right now that is making an impact. And then you can just run from that point forward.
Mm-hmm. How's that one sound, Dana?
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I definitely try to keep it positive and use, I guess pulling out the bits and pieces of what they're already doing and reflecting that back to them.
Mhm. Mhm. Yeah. And I believe I've written a tip on essentially this very topic. I can't find it right now, but I will see if I can find it, and when I send out the email later today or tomorrow with the recording, the link to this recording, I will put that tip number in there. Good question. So, who else has a question or concern or something to share?
I do. This is Haley Miller from New York City.
Hello, Haley.
Hi. So I just started a private nutrition practice, and it's good to talk to you, Molly. It's been a while.
Hi, Haley.
And so my question is, I have a client that is Orthodox Jewish, and again, like we talked about earlier in the call, she's struggling with, you know, the food rules that she has, but she has an eating disorder. She has anorexia nervosa, and that is primarily what my nutrition practice focuses on, all eating disorders. I also will treat the comorbid conditions such as diabetes and GI issues. And so she is quite underweight. She's almost 5'6". She's technically 5'3" tall, and she's about 105. And so she definitely needs to gain weight. And we're trying to get her into, you know, seeing, to adding her full team. Right now, I'm the only person seeing her. She also has a GI physician and an outpatient
physician.
Doesn't
have a therapist yet, yeah.
No, and basically my question is about if any other RDs on the call have experienced where a client comes to you and they have let you know that they were seeing a RD that acted as their RD and as their primary therapist. The RD that she was seeing, when I looked up her credentials, strictly an RD, but marketed herself as an RD and as a psychotherapist. So just a little bit on my background for those on the call. I am a licensed therapist, but in my practice I work as an RD, and so I will use my counseling skills as a background, and so I will get a lot of clients with eating disorders asking for me to do both, and, you know, I don't really want to have the dual relationship. I do want to work with an outside therapist. And so I really need her to be working on all of her psychological issues, family issues. She has some trauma where she was force-fed by a family member to just get her to eat. And so any skills that you all have found in helping a client that is so hopeless that treatment will even work for her, but then also getting her into seeing a therapist and recognizing the value of having a full team for eating disorder treatment.
It sounds like, Harold, you're a little behind what I call behind the eight ball. You're sort of stuck at this point, partly because she, in the past, worked with someone who was an RD and said that she would also do the psychotherapy piece. And Haley and I, by the way, are both members of a sort of informal networking group of people who are both dietitians and licensed mental health professionals. And there are some of us. There are dozens of us around the country. And I think virtually all of us that I know of have decided that when we treat eating disorders, it makes sense, it works better to either be the dietitian or the therapist on the team, and for the dietitian and the therapist to be two separate people and be in a team together, as Haley is appropriately referring to. And unfortunately, this client and maybe her family have experienced something different, where the client or the clinician was in a dual relationship. Some of you may not be familiar with that term, dual relationship, where the therapist and the client had two different roles together. It's two relationships, and doesn't tend to work very well, particularly with eating disorders. And I don't want to dwell on this too long, Haley, because I'm not sure how many people on the call do work with eating disorders. I certainly, for one, back you up 100%. And I tend to use words like standard of care, you know, phrases like that. And the most effective way to work with this is as a team. And this is the way I work. Those are the kinds of phrases that I'm apt to use. Describing to people my instance that get a therapist, basically. Does anybody have any other ideas for Haley?
Molly, this is Teresa, and Teresa Munkfold, and I primarily work with eating disorders, although I have private practice, and I'm a registered dietitian, but I don't, not the therapist piece. Mm-hmm. When clients come to me with an eating disorder and they don't, they're not currently working with a therapist, although typically they are, but those who come to me and are not, that's the first piece that, I make sure I tell them that it's really, unethical for me really to practice, to work with them without a team and especially without a therapist. And so I just, like, that's my policy. I just won't do it. You know, if they're like really through, you know, like kind of, you know, they've been recovering for a long time and they're on a good track, I would consider it. You know, if they're really just kind of need somebody to kind of be accountable to and kind of keep them going when they have hard days or whatnot. That's one thing entirely different, but when somebody comes to me with an eating disorder, that's the very first conversation I have with them, because it's just too much for one person, and you need it's just too complicated, and you really need that support, and they need that support.
Absolutely.
So that's what I do.
Yeah, and I'm sure, and Haley knows that, and unfortunately, Haley, you've got. This is an even stickier than usual situation because this family had been told something different.
Right.
This other person.
And I don't. And
how
when
do
I
you
discuss
say
it,
that without I mean, you are essentially putting down this other professional, this colleague,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
that's hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I always just approach it like this is my policy,
mm-hmm.
and you know, so that's how I work. And if you feel like that doesn't align with what you want to do, then we're probably not a good match.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so anyway.
How are we doing, Haley? Thank you, Teresa. How are we doing, Haley?
Yeah, that's great. Thanks, Teresa. Yeah, I would usually always say that we just started working together, and she and I, the patient, and so that was the first conversation we had. She just is so blocked. It seems like because of her trauma about adding other things, so she's finally able to start identifying that. She's kind of one of those patients that she's been in this process for 5 years and hasn't made much progress, and it seems like undertreated in the way that you know, her RD that she was seeing kept assuring her that everything was working, and it went on for 5 years with very little progress.
Five years.
So she's so hopeless
wow.
that, yeah, she's Ugh. So hopeless that anything could continue to happen, that her life will change. She actually is scared that she'll never stop. She basically restricts all day and then binges at night and has had severe GI distress because of that volume of food in a short period of time, but very hopeless that she'll ever stop that behavior. And so it's kind of like the level where she's at. She's just very sick. And so, you know, I think what maybe will happen is that I'll have to refer her to a PHP or a res level, but just trying to get her to
may need a
have
higher level
a little bit more
care.
Hope.
Yeah. Particularly since she's so entrenched and would need something to get her out of that hole. Yeah. Well, good luck, Haley.
I'll definitely use Teresa's words to help. Thanks, Teresa.
Sure. Okay. Who else has something to bring up?
Yes, I would like to add something.
Mm-hmm.
With the patient with the eating disorder, where is her physician? You should also be collaborating with her physician.
Yes, I am. I have called the physician, and she has an appointment set up for a follow-up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good.
And maybe you could discuss with her physician that maybe she would need a therapist.
Yes, yeah, I have said that to them. They're kind of like, we just need to see the patient in our practice before we make any recommendations, because it had been
mm-hmm.
about 6 months since she's seen the physician. So she has an appointment lined up, and then they're going to make recommendations from there.
And hopefully they will back you up.
Yeah, I think they will.
Therapist. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay. Any other things to chime in about, questions, fun things to
Molly, I have a situation, and I would like to just throw it out there to the group.
And who is
this? This is Teresa. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Sure.
This is Teresa. And I have a young eating disorder client. She is just turned 18, I think. Today is her birthday. she was, I think, three. She'd had an eating disorder. She just turned 18, so she's had this eating disorder maybe since she was, like, it probably started around 14 years old or so. She eventually got such a low body weight that she went in.
You know, Lisa, hold on a minute, because I'm not sure how much we're going to be able to do in terms of case consultation. That
okay.
These calls are for. If it's generally how to interact with the person, maybe. But in terms of case consultation, we really can't do very much. Is that
okay. Well, it's about the doctor.
And getting along with the doctor?
Her pediatrician who doesn't do a lot of eating disorders, and we don't really have good doctors here in the area, but told her that her 129 was a good weight for her to restore at. And later when I got to her, it was 140. But I mean, she needs to be like around 140. Like her period didn't even come back at 129. But she has that number stuck in her head. But anyway, so I had a conversation with the physician.
Here we have. Cold music or something in the background. Oh, there we go. Okay.
It's gone.
good.
So the doctor, I called her to get a note, you know, I called her to get a note because we don't want her to do sports for a little while, but the doctor was really resistant and said, you know, her weight, that's too high of a weight for her, and her weight should be 129, and I completely disagree with what you're saying and that you want her to regain to this. And I was like, whoa. She was looking at her growth chart, and so is this a relevant question, Molly, or?
Well,
or
know,
is it too much case?
Actually, let's take it into a more generic, because my guess is it's not only in the field of eating disorders that we disagree with another team member.
Something.
Right?
That's totally.
Matter of fact, I'm curious if anybody else has maybe another example of disagreeing with a physician or other team member.
Yeah, you know, and for me, like, I just presented, like, she didn't have her period at this weight. You know, she still has active eating disorder behaviors, and she's not restored to that weight. You know, I mean, I just kind of laid out the facts that I had, mm-hmm. you know, but she was looking at her growth chart going, well, that's not even realistic for her. And I was like, but she has an eating disorder, so it kind of skews what might be relevant to normal people without an eating disorder. And so it was very kind of uncomfortable.
Wasn't aware of that. Yeah.
So I just, I don't run across that very often, but I held my ground, and I just kind of felt icky about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't blame you for feeling icky. And indeed, when two team members disagree and the client knows that you disagree,
that
make the
and she
really happy. The eating disorder gets all excited, like, "Oh, I can get away."
Exactly. Right? Yeah. So it's really a struggle to get her to go beyond what the doctor said.
Yeah. Well, let's generically talk about how to talk to other team members. And this sort of reminds me of essentially the situation when you need to bring up with a patient or a client a tough
situation. Oh, good. Yes.
You know, they disagree with you on. Even not an eating disorder. A classic situation in nutrition, of course, is the parents with a child whose weight for height is well above the 95th percentile.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, no, my kid's fine. You know, we're all a little chunky in our family. It's no big deal. He's perfectly healthy, you know. And the kid's sailing off the top of the growth chart. An MI consistent way of doing that is to roll with it a teeny bit first. It's sort of like rolling with resistance, right? There's some background noise again. I'm going to – let's see if it's that person. That sounds better. I think I figured out who it was. It's first sort of rolling with it and saying, you're looking at a weight of 129 as well within a a restored weight for her, you know, and just sort of reflecting it and rolling
oh,
it
uh-huh.
like that, you know. And then saying, I have some information from my perspective that I'd love to share with you. Might I do that? Asking permission.
Mm.
And then it sounds like, Teresa, you had your information sort of lined up pretty well. You're pretty clear
mm-hmm.
on her period has not come back. With eating disorders, it's not at all unusual for someone's weight to need to restore slightly above what it was before in order to, you know, get fully back to a healthy metabolism, et cetera. You know, you might be able to figure out mm-hmm. better wording to use than me. And, you know, you quickly give that information really as concisely as you can and then say, how does that fit in with, you know, basically what are your thoughts or how does that fit in with the way you look at things? And hopefully it'll get listened. The other, actually, occurs to me, you're sort of hooking me in my interest in eating disorders, but one other little factoid in there, tied to a doctor, is that when the team members of a client with an eating disorder agree on the goals, success is more likely. Right?
Mm.
That's a fact. That would be the positive way of putting it. In other words, when the team members do not disagree, the eating disorder tends to win.
Would you say that?
Yes.
Would you?
I would say something. I would, if I had my wits about me, frankly, Teresa,
uh-huh.
and I was having a good day, I would add something like that in order for Susie to get over her eating disorder, it'll work much better if we're all on the same page.
On the same page.
I'd like to see if we can all get on the same page.
Oh, there you go. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay,
on the same
thank
page
you.
Is one way of looking at it. In order to try to engage in the conversation with it.
Okay.
Anyway.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. So the generic, again, situation is sort of an am I consistent way of bringing up something argumentative, if you will, is to
mm-hmm.
essentially just reflect a bit of what's happening first, ask permission to provide a few factoids, provide them, and then see where it goes from there.
Okay.
Question. I doubt you're the only one who's run into that.
Mm-hmm.
Other people who want to bring up anything. Hopefully not eating disorder this time.
Yeah, you know, and I think that it's probably just not that uncommon because, like, a lot of people want to go off statins and they want to try, you know, a dietary approach
mm-hmm.
to related to, you know, not just high cholesterol, but other, you know, other, like, not taking metformin and these types of things. And those are other instances where I've personally kind of run into some conflict with what the physician wants them to do and then what they want to do, and then they're coming to see me, you know, and so then there's that conflict too. So, yeah, I mean, it's not just with
right.
eating disorders, but it'd be great to hear what other people, their experiences or thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to chime in with anything on any topic?
Hello, this is Claire again.
Hi, Claire.
I have a question for the group, if anybody could maybe point me towards a resource. I do individual counseling, basically normally one-on-one or spouses with adults, primarily adults in wellness. And I have a client next week that they'd like to do a family meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And their one child is definitely in that 95 percentile. And they're not in hysterics about it. They're very appropriate. But they would like the family to maybe turn towards a better overall eating plan and not single out the one child that he is going to be on a diet or eating differently than the rest of the family. So the sibling will be attending, as well as both of the parents. And they've started, you know, family activities and sports and such. But I was wondering if anybody had any interesting resources for dealing with preteens and
how old is the children?
The boy is 10 and the girl is 8.
I use my plate for that.
Uh-huh.
MyPlate.gov.
Yeah. And, Claire, it's interesting because around 8 to 10 is about the, or my, to my way of thinking, 10 is about the cutoff that if you think about the way Ellen Satter looks at things, you don't meet with the kids first. You might not even meet with them at all. You'd focus on the parents, particularly if the parents want to do it as a family thing together. You'd meet with the parents by themselves first and discuss the family meal, how do the meals go, what kind of foods do you buy, you know, all those questions and things you need to take a look at.
Well, and I've worked with the father in the past.
And
I've actually talked to the wife on the phone. I've never met her. And they seem to be doing everything right. You know, they do eat well. They eat only organic. Lots of active time. The mother, the wife, seems to be frustrated in that whatever she says is wrong, with getting, you know, just getting that pushback. I guess with, you know, with the 10-year-old just, you know, well, my friends eat this, and they're basically looking for some additional structure for somebody else who's a, you know, professional to sort of give them some guidelines that they all hear together to sort of give a neutral third party approach. But if you're saying maybe we still should not involve the children, that is something I will certainly consider.
I wouldn't at first. I'd feel out as much as I can. Frankly, it sounds like it would be really good if there was a family therapist involved, because if, you know, Lord knows what's going on, the dynamics in the family. And, you know, it's funny, we're ending up getting back to the just tell me what to eat kind of thing, as if the answer is that the dietitian's going to tell everybody what to eat, and then they're going to do it, and it'll be fine, and the kid won't be overweight anymore. And it's, of course, not that simple. Do you know whether the parents have had any exposure to the division of responsibility and Ellen Satter's materials?
I actually do not. And I would like to
add... Is that something you're familiar with?
Yes, I am, actually.
Yeah.
So that's a very good question. But I would say they are not looking for weight loss for the child because they are all very big, large-built people. They are just... I mean, the husband is probably 6'7", mm-hmm. and just built solid. Mm-hmm. So, and doctors are saying they're not panicked because they realize, and apparently the wife is also a very, very tall woman.
Mm-hmm.
So they realize this child is not going to fall within the normal parameters.
Right.
So they're really not looking for weight loss, but they realize they do need to have a family approach to the to healthy eating.
Right, right. Because, and if this is a highly educated family that's willing to do some pretty sophisticated reading. I mean, Ellen Satter's book, Your Child's Weight, Helping Without Harming, might
mm-hmm.
be
okay.
something they'd be willing to delve into.
I think they would. That's a very good suggestion. Thank you.
And additionally, you can help them, you know, tweak possibly how they're interacting at meals and how they choose foods and whatever. There may be some tweaks that could be made. Interesting question. Does anybody else have any other input for Claire? Any suggestions? Edoki, we're almost out of time. We'd have time for one more sharing or question or something, if anybody has one.
Hi, my name is Heather. I'm in Florida. And
hi, Heather.
Thank you. I'm counseling someone remotely, and I've been working with her for a little while. And she is just someone who, when she kind of gets off track of what she wants to follow, she gets really down on herself. And I'm trying to figure out the best approach to, you know, just let her know that this is like a skill like anything else, and that it's going to take some time to figure out what works, and that we just need to revisit some ideas and, you know, just keep trucking forward. So I'm a new dietitian as well, and I'm just trying to figure out the best way to help someone understand that this is a skill and that it's going to take some time, and that it's just a matter of, you know, it's not anything she's doing or not doing. It's just a matter of figuring out the right strategies that work for her, you know, most of the time.
Right. And what you're hearing is a lot of self-criticism.
Yes. So how do I – because I know in the beginning it was, it was one of those things where I thought she was doing really well. But, of course, my opinion doesn't really matter. And, you know, it's her opinion that matters.
You can't argue with her.
Right. So how do I kind of make her turn that corner? I'm just looking for some good sound bites.
Well,
or something.
You can't make her do anything. You're not going to be able to argue with her critic. We all have critics in there. And some people have critics that are really strong and really take over, and they turn up their volume and nothing else can be heard from them. Arguing with that critical part of someone is not going to do any good at all.
Right.
And it's going to win. You know, you're only with her for half an hour, and her critic is there all the time. So sort of like rolling with, you might as well roll with it. I mean, what do you got to lose, Heather, right? Roll with it and say, wow, there's this part of you that really gives you a hard time. Some people use that, you know, phrase. You've got, and frankly, if you're willing to, Heather, I'd refer to it being a part of her, because it's not all of her. And she could probably use reminding, you know, that she has this part of her that gives her a hard time or yells at her or something like that. And might she ask that part to give her a little bit of space to look at what is working or what she's ready to try next or whatever fits in that situation. Is this making any sense?
Yeah. It reinforces. I have had her go back. I would ask her what went right this week, and she sometimes would be hesitant to say that anything went right, but you know, I think that we were able to circle back around and come up with some things that went right. And I would say, you know, well, what was the difference between that day and this day? And she would, you know, kind of see that. And so those are things that I feel like are working. I just still am not sure why, she's just someone who needs to be perfect. And when she's not,
right.
Not that there's
– She has a lot of black and white thinking. And
very much so.
Black and white thinking makes it much harder to change. That's simply a fact, unfortunately. And black and white thinking is one of the types of thinking that people who tend toward depression have as well. Now, if it really begins to seem like she's depressed, you might want to suggest a therapist. If it's more just this, an awful lot of black and white thinking, anyway, Heather, that you can manage to sidestep the black and white thinking, for instance, avoiding saying what went right, which is the opposite of what went wrong, right? And instead, backing her way up to, now, let's see, tell me what it is you're hoping for, what your goals are, sort of backing up to the almost like the first session. And then, what tiny little steps are you ready to do this week to take you in that direction, rather than continuing to categorize things as good or bad or right or wrong?
Okay.
Does that make any sense?
It does. It does.
Sort of noticing her tendency to do that and smiling at it, and maybe if you're lucky, eventually you two will have a little inside joke. Is that that black and white stuff again? You know.
I would like to add something. This is Teresa.
Huh?
I think sometimes it seems helpful to offer some perspective when clients are always feeling like a failure, especially when it comes to food and inability to control themselves around it. But, kind of like, when you learn to ride a bike, you don't just get on it and you know how to do it automatically, You have to work at it, and it takes time, and you don't beat yourself up too much, but you keep getting on the bike and you keep trying, and eventually you learn how to ride the bike. I mean, I think, because we get so stuck in our, our hopelessness and how we're so dumb or whatever it is, and just adding that perspective can kind of help her, go, oh, yeah, right. There's some truth to that, and giving that some perspective. And then I also like to always make sure that people understand that their mistakes that they make, like if they have a big binge or whatever it is, those are really learning opportunities. It's not time to beat yourself up, but they are really good learning opportunities, because we all make mistakes, and that's how we learn.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so using that kind of language.
Like not fighting with it. I get that you're upset and you're mad at yourself, but these are also learning opportunities. And what made you vulnerable to do that action, whatever it was that you did?
Right.
And then
it's just the time, Carissa. We do need to wind
yes.
up people to get back to whatever they have coming next. So Heather, I think Teresa has a good point, sort of the using different type of language about learning experiences, and when someone comes in and they didn't do a single thing, oh, that's interesting. What can we learn from it? Kinds of things. I have a tip or two with that kind of language that I'll also include in the email that I send out later today.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Well, good luck, Heather, and good luck to everybody. This has been a great call, and join us again in a few months. And for those of you who haven't already been to my two-day CEU program, maybe I'll see you somewhere in the next year or so. Or if you can't make it to one of those, maybe you can use my online Steps to Counseling Excellence program. Okay. Well, take care, everybody, and have a good weekend.
Thank you. You as well.